Dublin. Welcome to Deep Roots, a Metro Art and Dublab project highlighting Los Angeles' multi-layered music histories. Each episode features a spectrum of voices connecting the city's sonic landscape from point A to B and beyond.
Ruben Molina, record collector, community historian, author of The Old Barrio Guide to Lowrider Music and Chicano Soul, Recordings and History of an American Culture. I am also the co-founder of the Southern Soul Spinners Record Collective and a former native of Elysian Valley, also known as Frogtown. I want to tell you a story about how this neighborhood imprinted itself on my musical DNA. Our family moved into the working class community of Elysian Valley back in 1958. My parents had migrated to California from El Paso, Texas. My father came first at about 18 years old. He joined his comrades on the age-old art of freight hopping, first to look for seasonal work in the fields up north, and eventually to find steady work in the growing City of Angels. Freight hopping had been around ever since the late 1800s, when the first transcontinental train pulled into Los Angeles. And it was a means of free transportation to workers to get from city to city. The term pachuco is derived from the slang used by Mexican-American travelers from El Paso during that period. Each major city that was traveled by these men had a slang name associated with it. For example, Sacramento was Sacras, Albuquerque was Burque, San Antonio was San Anto, and El Paso was El Chuco, or simply Chuco. The center of their world was El Paso, so in some way, everyone was headed to Chuco eventually. And if asked, ¿A dónde vas ese? One might answer, bueno, pues voy para Chuco.
En Arizona, a tempo mona, lo han apañado en Colorado, en todo Texas, y hasta Nuevo México también. ¡Hey! Los vatos en Alburque se lo avientan, en Fresno y en Stockton lo revientan. Lo he visto yo bailar hasta en San Tony, en Houston y en San Angelo le ponen, se pone a todo tren.
During this time, my mother, Berta Alarcón, was 16 years old and pregnant with my older brother. My dad was 19 and found a job at the Blue Diamond Cement Company. And in 1952, after my brother Sal was born, they moved into a tiny duplex in Lincoln Heights. After that, the family kept growing. We kept moving around between Lincoln Heights, Cypress Park, and then finally, we settled into a pretty nice size home in Elysian Valley. I remember my mom being all excited when we moved in. It was three bedrooms, a living room, a dining room with hardwood floors, and the most important thing was this huge kitchen, which became the center of our family life.
Tanta vida yo te di que por fuerza tienes ya sabor a mí.
No pretendo ser tu dueña, no soy nada, yo no tengo voz.
And it's through that kitchen that my mom filled the house with the aromatic smells of her cooking. On days that she would make, you know, homemade flour tortillas, the house was filled with this magical aroma. And as that smell hit our noses, you know, one by one, the doors would open and we'd come out of our rooms, or if you're watching TV, you just kind of, everyone gravitated to the kitchen and around the stove where my mom was flipping these tortillas, right? And then we'd be like in line, and probably by seniority, you know, my older brother probably was at the head of the line, and we'd wait for our hot tortilla and we'd get it and put butter on it and just kind of melt back to where we came from, just eating this thing. That kitchen was also where the adults socialized on weekends. Friday and Saturday nights were for cooking, having drinks, and listening to music. If it was the holidays, they might be making tamales, or it could be some savory pozole or mole. And while things were simmering, they'd be laughing and drinking. The week's hard labor was past them, and life was good. We had a little record collection growing in our house, and it was all 78s. And 78s are the heavier 10-inch records. They were like my dad's pride and joy, right? So he had things by Pee Wee Creighton, T-Bone Walker, Johnny Guitar Watson, B.B. King, Don Julian, Jesse Belvin, and those were all mixed in with música de los tríos like Los Tres Diamantes and rancheras by Javier Solís and Pedro Infante and others. So for us kids, the music that our parents were playing was our music scene, if we wanted to pay attention. But it wouldn't be for a few years before we started to buy our own records and have our own gatherings and house parties, you know, to kind of follow along in my parents' footsteps. The music in our house varied. Being from Texas, we naturally heard a lot of music from Mexico. However, my dad and his friends would also make it a point to support the rhythm and blues artists that made their way to Los Angeles. During the mid-50s, they would go uptown to the 5-4 Ballroom on 54th and Broadway whenever Pee Wee Creighton, T-Bone Walker, and other Texas artists were in town performing. The 5-4 was a few blocks east of Central Avenue, which was the hub of the black community and a mecca for jazz, urban blues, and rhythm and blues from around the country. And although the entertainment was mostly black, the audience was pretty mixed. Into Elysian Valley, there was no 5 freeway, and the community was squeezed in between the Los Angeles River and the Elysian Hills. Riverside Drive was located at the foot of the hills where the southbound 5 freeway sits now. The community was a lot like our family. Almost everyone in our circle had migrated from either Texas or Mexico. Around 1964, construction of the 5 freeway was completed, and Elysian Valley was left with about half the community it used to be. The neighborhood bakery, ice cream parlor, theater, auto repair shops, markets, and hundreds of homes disappeared. I was about 8 years old when the community erasure began, so my memory of life before the freeway is vague. There was a small white building that St. Anne's Parish owned, and that's where we would go to catechism. The nuns, who dressed in the all-black habit, with just a crown of white around the contour of their face and neck, would pick us up after school. They would march us half a block down to that building for our Bible studies. And for the first 3 years of my life in Elysian Valley, that was my whole world, until we discovered the river. Once we started going down there, it was our paradise. I think we knew more about the ecology down there than anybody. And in the late spring or early summer, once the frogs' eggs would hatch, we would go down to where there was pools of water with dragonflies floating above. And with our hands cupped, we could scoop up water and tiny black tadpoles. The frogs would come up to the neighborhood in the fall, and the nights were very musical, almost as if we didn't live in a city. Frogs croaking, crickets, and I don't know what else, chirping. In the background, there might be the slow chugging of the train engines or the screeching brakes at Taylor Yard across the river. If the evening was warm, some of the local winos would be sitting under a tree, sharing a bottle of Tokay, and a beat-up transistor radio might be tuned into Radio Cali. As winter approached, the clouds became grayer. We knew the river would soon be rushing with water. If it was early enough and we knew rain was coming, we'd start looking for pallets from the factories that pushed up against the riverbank and haul them down by the water's edge. One day, as the water was moving really fast, we lowered our craft into the water, and Gary Prokokas jumped on. All of a sudden, the raft started moving, and his weight tipped the raft, and Gary fell off. Ray Sanchez runs to get the rope used to drag down the pallet, and he throws it to Gary. It took 3 tries before he finally cut the rope and was pulled out. Ray became the hero that day, and it was something we all aspired to from then on. Pero qué triste realidad me has ofrecido. Qué decepción tan grande haberte conocido. Quién sabe Dios por qué te puso en mi camino. A couple of years later, as 12 and 13 year olds, we started to come in contact with the local hoods who called the barrio Little Valley. And they called themselves the Little Valley Boys. The Little Valley Boys parked their cars under the shade trees at the dead ends along the river, drinking beer as they cleaned and polished their old cars, all the while listening to the music coming out of their car stereos. The doo-wop and sweet soul ballads that they were listening to seemed to be custom made for the lowered cars they were driving. We were determined to be noticed and accepted by them. We'd be a few yards up from them, sitting under the burning sun on the curb or sitting on our bikes, listening to their music. And like secondhand smoke, we picked up the art of lowriding and the music that is compatible with it. We knew in a few short years, we would inherit the shade trees and the neighborhood. For the moment, we were satisfied with the acknowledgement they gave us when they finally piled into their cars, and as they rumbled past us, they gunned their pipes. And that was their way of saying, we see you and we accept you. Dodger Stadium opened its doors in April of 1962. It was built on a piece of land nestled in the Elysian Hills called Chavez Ravine, a place where the three hilly barrios of La Loma, Bishop, and Palo Verde once stood. It was inhabited by Mexican-American families whose roots in the ravine date back to when California was part of Mexico. And long before them, it was home to the indigenous Tongva people. Some of the displaced families from those barrios moved down into the valley before it was also butchered by progress. The Cepeda, Betancourt, Flores, and Vallejo families each had roots in Chavez Ravine before making Frogtown their home. For us boys growing up playing ball on the streets, there were those of us that love the Dodgers and those of us that despise the Dodgers because of what happened in Chavez Ravine. And those gravitated into the rival San Francisco Giants camp. I was in the Dodgers camp. In an odd twist of city planning, the stadium opened before the freeway, so much of the traffic going into the stadium on game days was lined up bumper to bumper on Riverside Drive. When the 5 freeway was finally finished, planners had the good sense to build a bridge that went from Riverside Drive and Doris Place over the freeway and into the hill. It had no destination. It just stopped there, with no trail or path at the end of it. And then maybe as a second thought, they gated it and closed it with a heavy chain and lock. We used that bridge regularly to get up into Elysian Park and Dodger Stadium, where we roamed free of any authority except for our older brothers. Just to the left of the Stadium Way entrance, the Dodgers, or someone, put a small, simple baseball field there. So we would lug our gear up the hill and play pickup games there. And every so often, when we would show up at the stadium for a day game without any tickets in our hands, one of the ticket takers or security guards would wave us over and say, "Someone left these tickets for you, but you guys better behave." Closest thing to a musical event near our community came in 1966, and on August 28th of that year, the Beatles performed at Dodger Stadium to 45,000 screaming fans. Our last year at elementary school, the Beatles were a big thing. I don't remember those hairdos being popular, but I remember some of the guys wearing Beatle boots and velour turtleneck shirts, and the girls loved them. Still, I had no interest in them, and when my aunt and her friends who were visiting from Texas bought tickets for the event at $4.50 a pop, my brother and I declined the invite. The day after the Dodger Stadium concert, the Beatles performed at Candlestick Park in San Francisco. And that would be their last concert as a group. And as their lyrics became more meaningful and music more psychedelic, and marijuana came into the picture, I became more interested in them as a musical group.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me.
You are listening to Deep Roots, illuminating the intersectional music histories of Los Angeles.
By 1967, the Little Valley Boys had faded away, and the neighborhood picked up the street name Frogtown. During the mid-60s, frogs started to invade the community during the spring. And on one of the cool, damp evenings when some of the remaining Little Valley Boys hung out under a street lamp, Gotcha, from Eastside Clover, who lived in the barrio, noticed all of the frogs hopping around. The frogs had emerged from their hideouts and spread out throughout the community. And Gotcha said, "You guys should call this place Frogtown." And so it was. Being 13 and 14 years old, music became more serious for us because now it involved girls. Many times we just hung around a record player or a radio tuned in to KGFJ or KDAY, listening to soul ballads or the oldies that we had become accustomed to. Our conversations now centered around girls or an upcoming dance, which was also about girls. Other times we would go down to the river and there might be one or two guys with guitars and they'd harmonize to some chords they just picked up by listening to records. Simple songs like "The Town I Live In," "Sad Girl," or "We Belong Together." Every so often, I would go over to the next block where Richard Lopez lived. His sister and her friends would be there getting ready for a dance, and we made it a point to hang around watching them. My excuse was that I was changing the records for them, so I would go through their record collection. And it was there that I discovered the East Side Sound album and all of the great music contained within it. Side one was the rock side, and I wasn't really too interested in that side. It was side two, the ballad side, that I leaned towards. The bands on the album were all Chicano groups that came out of Lincoln Heights, Boyle Heights, East Los Angeles, and the San Gabriel Valley, with songs like The Romancers' "My Heart Cries," "Darling Dear" by Alfred and Joe, and The Heartbreakers' "Cradle Rock." I had my little record collection going, but this was the first time I had ever seen colored vinyl. The golden yellow translucent vinyl mesmerized me as much as the new music I was discovering. Also around the same time, we would catch the 57 bus on Riverside Drive to downtown Los Angeles. First thing we did was go shopping for clothes on Broadway. Corduroy and Levi bell bottoms were in style. And of course, we'd go to JCPenney's for the white Towncraft t-shirts. Then we'd stop for lunch at Clifton's Cafeteria, where my mother was working. And of course, she would make sure all of us ate well. And then after that, it was a trip to American Music record store, you know, to pick up the latest singles that were on the soul charts. By the time we got back into the safe confines of our neighborhood, you know, we went to my house and kind of locked ourselves in my room and just started playing these records and, you know, just kind of reminiscing about the day. So many of the records that I purchased at American Music back then, I still put in my record box today. I mean, they mean that much to me. It's not just about the music, but it's about the memories and the good times I had with friends that have long departed. And years later, when I started promoting shows, I would always look for an act to play one or two of these songs, as if they were sitting on the river, singing to the frogs. Something about growing up in Frogtown that made everything to do with sitting in a classroom pointless. In junior high, I could barely sit through the day, and my thoughts were constantly on the outside world.
I told her just what I was gonna do.
I started missing school regularly, and my poor parents were always in the office with me. High school was no different. I skipped classes and full days without a thought. And my favorite staff member in the school was the school's janitor, who I would work with while serving my detention. At times, we would sit in his office, which was this dingy, musty, dimly lit boiler room underneath the school. Its walls were lined with electrical conduit and old plumbing. An old discolored wooden desk was the only clue that this was actually an office. The janitor slash building engineer was the school's only black staff member. Sometimes as we sat in that boiler room, he'd lean back in his chair, and while the old radio on his desk played some rhythm and blues, he'd give me some of his knowledge. "Son, you have to give school a try," he'd say. "It's the only way you're going to make it in life," or something to that effect. But I had spent the last 10 years of my life on an adventure. First it was the river, then it was the hills above us, and now, through the city's bus system, I discovered the city. There were days that I disappeared into the massive Los Angeles Library and lost myself in books, mainly books on history and art. And then there were other days where I just sat on a park bench and drew the buildings and trees that lined the city. And some days we would all skip school together and spend the day simply getting high.
What the future's made of. And as the minutes pass, stand to the looking glass. What do I see, Lord? It can't be me. Growing old so gracefully. Still the world goes by. And oh, how hard I try. It keeps leaving me behind. Someday soon I know we'll all have to go. So dreaming can't be that much of a crime. Once in a while.
Between 1964 and 1970, the Midnighters were the biggest thing to musically come out of East Los Angeles. Their songs like The Town I Live In, Could It Be, and Dreaming Casually were huge in many Chicano communities, and our barrio was no different. In the summer of 1970, word started to go around that the Midnighters would be performing at a house party on Gilroy Street. And naturally, all of us were excited. We had spent countless hours sitting around a record player listening to the Midnighters albums. They were like the Beatles of East Los Angeles, and our neighborhood would be hosting them. It would be the party of the year. When the evening finally arrived, we were all prepared. Everyone had gone downtown to buy something nice to wear. The girls were all dressed up, and the guys pulled out their best shirt, trying to look sharp. After all, it was the Midnighters. There was a huge crowd of teens outside the Quittenour house, and the line went down the driveway and into the backyard. Beer at the party ran out early, so we passed the hat, and once we had enough for a few cases, some of the guys went out to try and get an adult to buy the beer for us. About 20 minutes later, our beer run guys returned, empty-handed. All they could tell us was that some older guys had taken our money and split. But then they told us, we followed them. We know where they are. There was an angry cry of, let's go get our beer. But wait, the Midnighters haven't started. That debate lasted about 5 seconds. In the end, we decided to go out and get our beer. After all, we were Frogtown, and as young as we were, our pride was on the line. We were now mobile, so we pile into 5 or 6 lowered 1950s cars. We drive up Fountain to a medium-sized bungalow house across the street from King Junior High. There was about 20 of us, only about half of us fit in the house, and the porch was crowded with guys trying to see what was going on in front of them. A few of us made it all the way back into the kitchen and started getting the beer and handing it down like an assembly line. Someone on their end said something, and our reply came in the form of a flying punch. There was fighting in the living room, in the dining room, in the kitchen. Ray Sanchez went flying through a window. I went flying over the porch, and when I hit the pavement, some guy pulled a gun. Luckily for me, the old revolver he was holding misfired, and he went running off into the dark. In the end, we prevailed and left with what beer was left and our pride intact. Needless to say, when we got back to our party, bruised and battered, the Midnighters had finished performing. And while people were telling us about their performance that night, we were grinning from ear to ear, like the cat that ate the mouse. few months after we didn't see the Midnighters perform in our barrio, things started to change rapidly. Influenced by the hippie culture that had started back in the mid-60s and was slowly catching on in the Chicano communities, guys started to let their hair grow and started to dress more relaxed. Beards, faded flared jeans, and colored tees became more common. The girls also started wearing jeans, which was uncommon in our first years of high school. Musically, the polished sound of the Midnighters gave way to the jazzy sound of El Chicano. Rather than just songs of love, music was now a messenger, anti-war, anti-poverty, pro-democracy, and it was psychedelic to top it off. And our music and my dad's music became just a bit more similar. He was listening to the jazz of Charlie Mingus, Freddie Hubbard, and Pharoah Sanders. I was listening to jazz-influenced artists like Jimi Hendrix, Carlos Santana, War, and The Doors. And we would find music that fit what we had grown comfortable with. El Chicano's Sabor a Mi, Captain Beefheart's I'm Sad, and War's All Day Music. In Frogtown, the shade trees we inherited from the Little Valley Boys were ours now. And we parked under them to listen to our music, drink beer, and maybe smoke a little marijuana. When we were done, we would pass the kids parked up a ways from us and gun our pipes. On Sundays, Griffin Park was Los Angeles' mecca for the hippie culture. From our house, it was about 3.5 miles to Los Feliz Boulevard and the entrance to Griffin Park. At the time, we would simply walk along the river and then jump the fence near Los Feliz and then just join the mass of people going up into the park. Stage for the Lovin's was up by the merry-go-round, which looked down on a large section of the park, dotted with trees. And on Sundays, that park was packed with thousands of people who carried blankets to sit on, bags filled with wine and food, and every manner of musical instrument that they could carry. The times we did take cars, we would park up by the merry-go-round, where the Hell's Angels hung out, looking over the crowd like angry police. As the crowd waited for the bands to perform, there would be small groups of musicians here and there playing guitars, tambourines, bongos, congas, flutes, and bells. And as the day wore on, the smell of marijuana got stronger and stronger, and a few people under the influence of LSD would start to shed their clothes as they danced to the rhythms of the makeshift drum circles. Finally, the bands would start performing, and although I can't remember their names, they did influence the music we were buying, which by now, we were shopping for albums at head shops rather than just at the record stores. The head shops were small, dimly lit rooms where the smoke from burning incense rose from a corner table and blue lights illuminated the day glow posters that hung on the walls. Besides posters, rolling papers, rolling machines, and pipes, they had bins filled with the latest in rock albums. And not the stuff you heard on your AM station. Now it was FM radio that we were listening to, and the songs were 10 to 15 minutes long. The stations we were tuning into were KLOS and KMET, who played Jimi Hendrix, Canned Heat, Creedence Clearwater Revival, The Rolling Stones, and yes, The Beatles. Eventually, the love-ins ended. The war in Vietnam continued, and several of us joined the Marines or Navy and disappeared for a couple of years. When we got back, things had changed yet again. But our time in the river prepared us for everything that would come at us as young men. It was our obstacle course and our spiritual guide.
Don't be afraid, do as I say, baby. Don't be afraid, do as I say, baby. Girl, please come closer.
Do it, do it.
Look me in the eye.
Do it, do it.
Tell me that you love me.
I'm Ruben Molina, and you've been listening to Deep Roots on Dublab Radio. Thank you for taking this trip with me to 1960s Frogtown. My experiences there continue to resonate in my life and musical explorations to this day. I hope the journey brought some magic to you as well.
Pucker your lips and kiss me, girl. Don't be afraid, do as I say, baby. Don't be afraid, do as I say, baby.
Yeah.
This is Deep Roots, exploring the music histories embedded in the Los Angeles landscape. To learn more about Dublab's progressive programming and community-driven artistic amplification, visit dublab.com. For more on how Metro Art enriches transit journeys through the visual and performing arts, visit metro.net/art.
In the final few minutes that we have left, let's keep that magic under the shade trees going for just a little longer. These are some of the songs that became a big part of our vibe in Frogtown through the years. You know, Ralphie and Joe were always popular with us, so here's Joe Bataan with My Cloud.
That is all I want from you. I'd want your love and your kisses too. And I'm begging you, baby, please don't go. 'Cause every day is the same old thing, just a wishing and a hoping that we. 'Cause every time you're here, every time you're gone, I feel so alone. But to me, I'm just a friend. That's all I've ever been. And that's why I'm making you, girl, over and over again. Oh, every time you're near, oh, everything's so real. But I'm asking you, girl, is it gonna be this way? Seems like every time you're gone, I feel so alone. But to you, I'm just a friend. I guess that's all I've ever been. And that's why I'm begging you, girl, over and over again. Yes, I am.
That was the Royal Chessmen with Begging You from 1967. They were from El Monte, about 15 miles east of us. Before them, the late, great Rafi Pagan with No Soy De Ti. There's a few songs that bring back so many memories of Frogtown, especially the faces of people that are no longer with us. And each generation has their own songs that, you know, bring back memories for them. So I'm just going to go out with the one that does it for me. Here's the Soothers with The Little White Cloud That Cried.
That cried. He told me he was very lonesome. Yet no one cared if he lived or died. Sometimes I think, the thunder and lightning would make all
the little clouds cry. He said, have faith in all kinds of weather, for the sun will always shine. Do your best and always remember the dark cloud. Try. That's why I think I'll always remember the little white clouds that cry.